Good evening, boys and girls. School is back in session. This will be the first night of the 2017 budget presentations, and we will, the way I would like this to go for the next few minutes is the county administrator has a few words to say, Kevin has a few words to say, and I will follow that up, and we will begin at about 5:40 with soil and water. I noticed that John is here, highway is here, office for the aging is here, social services will be here, county clerk will be. The district attorney has begged off this evening. The acting DA has a candidate quorum he has to go to, and he will be back on the schedule on Monday night next week. So, let's begin. Joe.
Thanks, Jim. And I'm only going to take 2 minutes of your 10-minute opening remarks. I do want to spend a couple of minutes just to go through this book, not to read you the book or go through the details of it, but just to remind you what's in here. We spend a lot of time to make sure that this is a good information tool and decision-making tool for the legislature. So I want to make sure you all have a clear understanding of what's in this book. By the way, when I gave my remarks the other night, I didn't give nearly enough credit to Kevin McGuire for converting a whole bunch of systems into the single system that has produced this book that's in front of you tonight. It really is an amazing job that was done, and in the future it's going to save us a ton of time as we prepare this book. So if we could just go really quickly through here. There are tabs. The first tab is just an overview of the county along with some departmental contact information. The real substance begins in Section 2. My favorite page of this entire book, and the one that I consult almost every day of the year, is on page 1 of Section 2. It's our consolidated budget. And it shows you by kind of functional line how much we spend, what change there's been over the past year, where the revenues come from, and how much is left to be supported with property taxes, including the property tax rate. I think you'll find this one a good and important chart. The OTRs, there's another page between, but the OTRs are summarized beginning on page 3 of that section. There are more complete descriptions elsewhere when you go through the departmental sections, but a good summary is on page 3, and it continues for several pages. Some of the big things in this budget that appear kind of scattered throughout are consolidated on page 20. The big revenue accounts are in there, the unallocated revenues. So these are revenues that come to the county like sales tax. They come to the county. They don't come to a specific department. They're not earned income in the department. They come to the county in the form of fees, pilots, taxes, and so forth on page 20. The county, full county FTE roster that I talked about in the slideshow is on page 21, so you can see by department how many people work for each of those departments. The mandates are summarized on page 22. Our benefits on 23. There were questions about fund balances at the presentation. Those are on pages 24 and 25. There was a question the other night about rollover. The balances are on page 26. The property tax summary, cap summary is on 27, room tax, and then my favorite chart in the whole book, how that 1% sales tax is distributed. My mother used to tell me about Rube Goldberg machines, and it looks like a Rube Goldberg to me. As we get into the next section, Section 3 is our capital plan. We've improved it this year. Always we have questions about what these projects are that are behind the numbers. We always give you a good numbers account for what we want to spend, propose to spend in capital. This year we've added a summary of each of the projects that are in that plan to begin that section. And then the string of numbers showing projects by year, by department, debt service implications, and so forth. That's in Section 3. In Sections 4 and 5, we hit the real budgets, the department or agency by agency budget. And within there, there's also a breakdown. The consolidated budget is on the first page. In every case, the full-time equivalents are on the next page. If there are divisions of the budget by function, the next page, and then we move on. And that's the format followed for all the departments and agencies in 4 and 5. And then kind of the appendices, the fee schedule is under tab A. I think you're going to find these much more readable this year. And also, I think the units that they refer to are included this year, so there's an improvement there. The contracts are in B, so every contract in the departments that show up in the line items are listed under B. And then memberships in the final appendix item, which is C. So those are the building blocks of this budget. Hopefully you'll find those all informative as you continue in this review.
Thank you, Joe. Anyone have any questions for Joe? Mike?
Joe, I know we authorized you to purchase some budgeting software. Can you tell us how that's worked out for you?
It's worked out great. It's been a little harrowing because it really didn't get started until the beginning of the year. We called it a just-in-time delivery system. So as we needed things, my hair got a little whiter. We were a little worried that maybe we wouldn't hit the mark, but every time we did. We've taken a fair amount of time this year to do the budget in spite of this new software system, only because we did everything in parallel to make sure it was right. From this point forward, I think this system is going to take a ton of hours and a lot of headache and a lot of potential for inaccuracy out of the process. So I've been really pleased with what we've gotten out of this product. And again, Kevin is very much a part of the architecture of it and was our quality person, and it's really paid off.
Anyone else? Carol?
Thank you. And for the clarity of the budget from year to year, it's great. Refresh my memory on the contract section. As I recall, there are some contracts that are in here and some that aren't. So which ones make the cut of being in here versus not?
I'm going to refer to Kevin.
We really asked departments to put all their contracts in here this year. I don't think that there was any prior policy of some, you know, any delineation of such and such kind of contracts were and such weren't. It was less an issue of sort of procedure and more just a result of that not being the most important piece. But I think we're getting close to having it reflect all the contracts, and in the future, because we're using the same vendor as we do for the contracts database, we anticipate being able to tie those together so that it's really accurate.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Two things in the overview section. So the mandates page, section 222, page 22, Medicaid is $11.5 million. You said on Tuesday night that $466,000 is 1% on the tax levy. So I just did really simple math. That's 25% of the tax levy.
That's exactly right.
Is Medicaid.
That's exactly what it is.
So if the state did what every other state does, our taxes, property taxes, 25% lower overnight. And assigned counsel, since they have passed a 7-year takeover, then that much smaller number is going to start going down. So that'll be good. But
if the governor signs it.
Oh, he hasn't signed it yet. Oh, and then there's also what else they will take away as they giveth. I just, on the full-time equivalents, page 21. So these are county staff, and so it includes seasonal, it includes grant funded, it includes like in social services and health, people are like 33% paid by the state, et cetera. So this is regardless of the source of their salary and fringe, these are the bodies that we have.
The only thing it doesn't include, so through the workforce program, when there's a summer youth program, I think we push those through our payroll. Those are not counted as county employees, and they shouldn't be. So those aren't in here. Lisa has some folks that are in a senior employment program, not really county employees, but so those aren't. But, boy, everything else is. This is a full picture of the county workforce.
Okay. Thank you.
Kevin, you had a few things you wanted to say. Go ahead.
I just, one of the places where questions may arise is in the program summary section for each department and agency. There are the FTE entries for some of those. In cases where departments or agencies entered text in addition to numbers, that text is often truncated. And that's, people got accustomed in the old system to being able to enter text and have our reporting apparatus accommodate that. I was faced with a choice between leaving it as is as we went to print or going in and deleting the non-text part. But because we're also producing, as we have in years past, the full PIA report, which will be available on the website, I did not want to delete the data and not have it available in that context. So you'll see some things that are truncated, and as soon as the vendor and I can get the full report posted, you'll be able to see the content that is now truncated.
Could you give us an example?
For Kevin?
Just as a clarification, you said TIA report. What is that?
I meant to say PIA. I apologize if I said TIA. It's a program impact assessment report. It's one of our acronyms that we weigh ourselves down with.
And if I could just wedge in here. And if you look at, I just picked one at random. If you look at page, in section 4, page 32, it's a summary of those program impact assessment forms. So we do try to present the budget both in line item form and also programmatic form. And what Kevin was talking about was the kind of the programmatic presentation that we do. So in my budget, again, it's on page 32, you can see how we break down programs, show by program area how much we spend and how many FTEs are attached to that specific program. As we get into performance measures, these programs are going to become more important because that's kind of the unit of measurement that we will use in the future, these programs. It'll be the programs that we will look at closely when we do outcome-based performance measures.
But the performance measure you're saying is the FTE?
It'll be an outcome-based measure of some kind, but it will be by program as opposed to by entire departmental budget.
Thank you. Kevin, go ahead.
The only other sort of housekeeping detail about the way the transition from the old system to the new affected the program summary reports in the budget book is with the agencies, they used to, in many cases, put in their full budget and their full revenues, and then the net local that they showed was the county's share of that. Because of the way the system works, they were entering data into the same system that the departments were. So this year, instead of you're seeing their full budget and their full expenditures, full revenues, and the county share, you'll see just the county money that's going into their department. I went through and for the ones that had their full share listed, I moved that information down into the related explanatory box, so that will appear for you in the full program impact assessment report when we get that together and posted. So that's just another slight change that I wanted to brief you on.
Thank you. Carol, I had your hand up. You have a question
just,
for Kevin.
Well, just for the record, where on the website do people go to find the PIAs when you post them? Through the homepage, budget section, where will they be?
Yes, through the homepage and to the budget section.
Okay, and then I just recommend to people who haven't been through this before, I started out of cycle with everybody else, and I don't remember who it was before Joe, but I got somebody to sit down with me and go through an example department and exactly what it is we're seeing here and the lines and the revenue and the expenses. It's worth doing.
Anything else, Kevin?
No, thank you, Jim.
All right. This is from me to all of you, the 13 legislators. This whole process takes 6 meetings in September and then 3 voting meetings in October. And the way it works best is department heads make their presentation, You raise your hand, I call on you, you ask them questions about what their presentation was, and if you have some questions about that. I really make an effort to stay within the time frame. If you look at the schedule, I make an effort to stay in that time frame. One of the things I've learned over the last few years is if we get off and go in the weeds and we begin making political comments and about whatever department it is, I think about this or I do that, that kind of delays the process. And we have that opportunity in the month of October when it becomes voting meetings, and you have three or four of those, we have three or four of those scheduled to do that. So I would hope that for Anna and Rich, that they my explanation is simply raise your hand, I put your name on a list, you ask your question, we move on, and you get the answer you want to. So anyone have any questions for me? Oh, one other thing. The food is in the office. The next amount of food is going to be on all of us. So I am asking that everyone contribute $20 to the fund, and that should get us almost through the process. Mike, you wanted pizza one night. Is that it? You know, we will certainly try to do that.
Gluten-free, of course.
Anna, what was that?
I said, as long as there's gluten-free, I'm good.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely that. So I think if there's nothing else, let's go on and begin with John Nigley and soil and water. And John, welcome to the whole contest here, and there you go.
Welcome to Thunderdome.
I'm tired.
All right, let me just say one other
money
thing.
For going first.
Let me say one other thing. His pages in the big book are chapter 5, page 39. It says 41. But I looked it up, and it looks like it begins on page 39 in section 5. So go ahead, John. Sorry.
All right. Well, thank you for allowing me to go first as an agency to the county and not a department. Joe said it's a privilege and an honor to go first, so I'll take that as a compliment and go forth. So I just wanted to present tonight as quickly as possible the budget for the Soil and Water Conservation District. Like I said, we're an agency to the county. We're not a department or a division or anything like that. We're an agency. And in our recommended budget that Joe has recommended to you, we have $207,383 in our target funding this year. That's down from $243,000. We had a $40,000 OTR last year for a hydrilla program manager that we no longer need. We have found other funding for that position. So this is our recommended budget that you see in front of you. There are some other OTRs that I'll get to later on that are not supported by the budget at this point, but we will talk about that. So I just wanted to step back and talk about some of our major accomplishments in 2016. Our hydro seeding program has been off and running, and even with the drought, we've been able to do some hydro seeding along roadside ditches with town and county highway. And this was a pretty poor year for growing. A lot of the farms are seeing some not so productive hauls of crops. So the hydro seeding program saw the same kind of productivity. It was pretty sparse, but we did put in 36,000 feet of hydro seeding material to seed roadside ditches. We also collected 72 tons of tires, about 2,000 tons of tires in the town of Lansing, and we were able to send those off to a recycling plant for reuse. A lot of people seem to love to collect tires, and we're able to take those off their hands. We also purchased a new Finn mulch blower. Basically, it's used for erosion control, filling silt socks instead of erosion control silt fencing along construction sites. We can use these socks, and then contractors can use the compost on site, stabilizing steep eroding banks, and a lot of other different uses that we can use with this. So another piece of machinery that we added to our fleet along with the hydroseeder, and that was purchased through a New York State DEC grant. We also have our AEM program, Ag Environmental Management. This is kind of the bread and butter of a lot of soil and water districts across the state, how we work with farms, how we engage with them, how we help them plan for conservation and put conservation on the ground. So in this past year, we had 14 farms that we did some inventories and assessments on, and we also planned with a bunch of farms for 23 acres of pasture management, and then we followed up and evaluated some of the practices that we've put on the ground in the past on 10 of those farms within the county. And I want to kind of sit on this slide for a little bit. This is our FLOPA appropriation that we work with through the Environmental Protection Fund through the state. FLOPA gives us a pot of funding, the Finger Lakes Lake Ontario Watershed Protection Alliance. And we use that funding to put water quality improvement programs on the ground. So you can see out in the town of Caroline, we covered over a barnyard area, keeping clean water out of dirty areas, manure-filled areas, keeping the clean water clean, allowing that to run off into the local streams free of pollutants. We also support the USGS gauging stations for flow monitoring on Six Mile Creek. So that was very important to the city of Ithaca this year as they were updating their website with the flow data regarding the drought. We've also worked with the Community Science Institute and their water quality monitoring programs. We also do a lot of stormwater trainings with code enforcement officers, municipal highway departments, contractors, and then we also do stream bank stabilization projects. And that last bullet there, I want you to kind of take a look at. We also support a staff member of the district for $30,000 with this fund. This is part of one of my OTRs that I have within my request to take the funding from this pot of funding and put it into the local county support so that we can use this funding pot for more on-the-ground implementation of water quality improvement programs. I think that's a better use of this funding. So looking ahead into 2017, what are some major influences that are going to affect our budget? We have four major things. The Southern Tier Ag Industry Enhancement Program, I'm going to refer to that as the STEP program. The Governor's Environmental Protection Fund budget, the increases in those for 2016 and 2017. Our hydrilla eradication efforts and the Cayuga Lake TMDL, or total maximum daily loads. To dive right in, the STEP program, we've been allocated $1.35 million for projects from the state to the Soil and Water District, and 11 counties were in this program, and we were, like I said, allocated $1.35 million, and had a couple rounds of application periods for farmers to come in and apply for projects between $20,000 and $100,000 for economic improvements on their farms. We've done two rounds so far. We're in round two right now. The first round, we had 10 applications. Eight of those applications were funded. Two of the applications had some minor glitches in their applications, so they're eligible for round two. And we had $620,000 worth of awarded applications. So some of those projects are going to include barn upgrades and expansions, grain processing facilities, some solar panels, and machinery and commodity storage facilities. The increases in the Governor's Environmental Protection Fund, that's really going to affect soil and water districts this coming year. He increased the Environmental Protection Fund up to $300 million. And some of those programs are the AgNOP Point Source Program. We do a lot of implementation with farms through this competitive program, $14.2 million to $19 million. We also had a pilot program last year for climate-resilient farms, so making farms more climate-resilient, in the face of our changing climate. So that increased to $2.5 million, and then DEC's water quality improvement program went from $8 to $20 million. And then some of the non-competitive funding, you can see there, FLOPA and the Soil and Water District's appropriations also increased. Our hydrilla eradication efforts have been going very well. We've found no signs of hydrilla in the Cuga Inlet through all of our monitoring so far. Also for the Cuga Lake itself, we found no hydrilla. There was, in 2015, we found a few isolated patches near the Cornell Sailing Center. We have not found those again this year. The only places we have found hydrilla have been in the golf course lagoon area of Fall Creek, and those are in some small patches. When I say small, 4 foot by 4 foot small patches. So we're really tackling this this problem, and hopefully next year we can work with the hydrilla task force and really scale back the treatment efforts and go more towards a monitoring and oversight of the plant. And a big thank you goes out to the county for the $200,000 that was appropriated as a reimbursement kind of revolving loan for 2015 and 2016. And we will no longer need that for hydrilla eradication efforts, but that's going to tie into one of my other OTRs that I'm requesting to go into more of the overall grants within the district. Kind of not have to reinvent the wheel, but keep that going. So, like I said, we don't need that $200,000. Other funds, the New York State Parks and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, are going to be covering the hydrilla eradication efforts. And that includes the hydrilla program manager. The last thing that I want to touch on for major influences on our budget is the Cuga Lake TMDL. So the total maximum daily load, some of you may be scratching your head, what's a TMDL, what's a total maximum daily load? Basically, the EPA passes down to New York State DEC, which then passes down to local governments to implement a cap on a pollutant to a water body that's limiting its use. So the south end of Cuga Lake is for contact recreation. At one point it was for swimming. That's no longer a use. But that is being inhibited by phosphorus coming into the south end of Cuga Lake. And that picture that you see is after a rainstorm, south end of Cuga Lake. You've probably seen the sediment coming in. And DEC, at one point they were talking that a TMDL is going to be, it may happen, it may not happen. Well, it's no longer a matter of if it's going to happen, it's a matter of when it's going to happen. And really, DEC is looking to have this as a voluntary program. They don't want to have to put regulations, restrictions on people to meet these phosphorus limits. But if nothing is done and no implementation is done, they will come in with a regulatory hammer. So how does that impact the Soil and Water District? My thinking and the word on the street that I keep hearing is the Soil and Water Districts are in the best position to put on the ground implementation of conservation practices on the ground. So we're going to be looked at as the go-to leaders to put these projects on the ground. It's going to make Tompkins County more competitive within the Environmental Protection Fund, water quality improvement grants, any federal grants that have water quality improvement. But with that, there's a lot of upfront funding that needs to be shown. So there's going to be a lot of grants, but a lot of those grants are on a reimbursement basis. So we have to show expenses up front and then get reimbursed. The district doesn't have a ton of cash on hand to cover those upfront expenses. So that second OTR there that you see, the one-time $200,000, That's what I'm looking ahead into 2017 and beyond, and asking the county for $200,000 as a one-time OTR to have in reserve that then we can reimburse from grant funds that reserve account. My hope was to have that be a one-time and done kind of scenario with the county, and then we would just report back to the county of how we have reimbursed that fund. But in communication with Joe and Rick, it seems like the concept that we've been working with Hydrilla of reimbursing the county for that $200,000 is going to be a better scenario than having that sit within the district's reserve and we just report back to you. And then I also talked about the $30,000 staff salary increase of $30,000, and that would be target funding. So here's just a depiction of that salary support. Right now, FLOPA is covering 34% of that staff person. I'd like to be able to reallocate that into local funding support from the county. And then we kind of touched on a lot of these before, but the $2.35 million in expenses in 2017, that's what we're projecting for all of our program and grant expenses. So we're going to need to shoulder those expenses up front in a lot of scenarios and then get reimbursed from the county. We've been doing that in the past. It's been a bit of a struggle, so hopefully that $200,000 will help to shoulder some more of that burden. Our $267,000 in administrative costs are what the target funding from the county is covering, so that is kind of a separate line item in our budget. The $200,000 would not go towards any administrative operating costs of the district. It would be strictly for on-the-ground projects. And then this is my last slide. I just wanted to kind of give, I gave this last year, the financial health of the district. Every year I get asked what the other soil and water districts get reimbursed from their county, and those lines on the chart there are other soil and water district allocations, so we're kind of right in the middle of the pack there. Cayuga County gets quite a bit of funding from their county, and I would just caution everybody that comparing apples to apples between soil and water districts across the state is very hard to do. Each district is set up differently in their funding scheme, so take this with a grain of salt. But you can see the red line there. The county funding in the past few years has increased, and along with that, you'll see the increases in our net position and our operating fund balance, which are the two lines here that kind of dip and then come back up. And I'm pleased to say in 2015 that we're above the zero line, so we are in positive fund balance and a positive net position for the first year and couple years, quite a few years. And our deficit, the green line here, back to the New York State Ag and Markets, the projection is 2024 having that paid off. We're on that path, but hopefully within the next 2 to 3 years we can really knock that deficit out. So.
Questions for John. Martha raised her hand about 2 seconds after you started talking, so she's the first one. Go ahead. And then Mike after that.
Hi, John. Thank you. Hi. Thank you for your presentation and your work. I'm looking in the big book that's got our budget, and it's page 39 of section 5. I don't know if John actually has that. So it says there's the two bottom lines there say department net local $437,000, even though the requested OTR is not granted. Is that a mistake? Because on the page that John gave us doesn't have that.
So the page after that, I think this is correct.
Yeah, and so the right, the next page has also has the total budget, which would be 207. So that 437 is wrong? Because that's the sum of those two.
That was the request.
Okay. Then I was, I want to clarify on the different kind of monies coming in. You said the Southern Tier Ag Industry Program, $1.35 million was allocated. So that was for Tompkins County, right,
that,
where you've
yes.
got two different rounds. What kind of projects have those? Oh, that's the next phase, the barn upgrades, et cetera. That's really great. Then the next slide talks about Cuomo's Environmental Protection Fund. Those amounts, that's statewide, right?
That's statewide, yes.
Okay, and you haven't applied for those yet, or... Or you haven't found out yet, or?
Yeah, those will be 2017 funding.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks so much.
Mike, and then Anna.
John, we have two lakes in Tompkins County of significance. One is Dryden Lake, and the recent report talked about the algae bloom there. Is your department looking at that? I realize it's a DEC lake, but are you helping?
We haven't been asked specifically about the Dryden Lake algae blooms, but I know that DEC is always looking on the lookout for harmful algae blooms. So there's a difference. Sometimes there's an algae bloom, and it may not be a harmful algae.
Well, they put up signs saying that don't no swimming, no don't come in contact with it up there. So it must be it is a harmful one.
Okay.
So. And when asked about it, they said that what's causing it, they recommended that the town investigate where the phosphorus was coming from.
Okay. So, yeah, we'd be very willing to work with the town and help them out with that.
Thanks.
Anna.
Just a quick follow-up to Martha's question. The slide 9 in your presentation, these funds, the competitive funds from Cuomo, are all of these ones where you would have to pay up front and be reimbursed for it? That's what you're referring to? That's all of this?
Yeah, the non-competitive funding would be funding that we would receive.
Right. So then just the competitive funding?
Just the competitive, yep.
And is it, just so I understand clearly, putting money in reserve or having that, you're saying, would make us more competitive for these?
Not necessarily more competitive. It would make it easier for the district to be able to make payment to, say, if we have a contract with a farmer and they're out expenses to a contractor, we can make payment very quickly to reimburse a farmer for those expenses rather than the farmer or the contractor having to wait 3 months for reimbursement from the state.
Okay. But the state doesn't look at that as, financial security as a component of this competitive, in your experience?
Not in the application phase, usually.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Martha?
I guess it's a question to Joe, and we talked about the county's overall fund balance previous legislature meeting. That's obviously a big $200,000, a big dollar number, but it is one time, and the proposal is that it comes back to us, essentially.
Yeah.
Why'd you say no?
Actually, I think John probably put this in because earlier in the year we had talked about maybe there's an easier way of doing this bridge loan program than what we've been doing. So over the past couple of years, Soil and Water has come to the legislature and asked by a specific resolution to have this advance available to them. And at the end of each year, then they pay that money back. So it allows, it's a cash flow vehicle for them. So I think we had talked about, is there an easier way to do this through the budget process? As we talked about it more, including Rick and I, there's some real challenges if we were to just give them the money, even if they were to report scrupulously about it. Still, there's some concern about just giving an agency that amount of money for cash flow purposes to have in their accounts as opposed to ours. In the end, I think where I came out, and I think Rick was in the same place, even though it may be a bit of a hassle, it may still make more sense to come back every year to the legislature and say, should we do this again? And do we need $200,000 or do we need something else? So to do it that way. In fact, we're even thinking about, should that be a resolution that is passed kind of at the same time as the budget to give that authority for the bridge loan, as opposed to moving the money over and letting the district kind of manage that for the long term. It's going to come, I mean, your point was the reserves and fund balance. It would come from the same place.
Right.
You bring it in and loan it out.
We should do that with TCAT and TC3, right, that we kind of give them money up front as to manage cash.
Yeah, that's really giving them their allocation up front. This is really a cash flow. I don't want to call it a loan because we can't do that, but it helps them with cash flow.
All right. Thank you.
Will.
That's part of my question. John, on your final slide, you talked about the overall financial health and the payback to the state. I know that your agency went through a very difficult period and that the state was actually not only wanting money repaid, but also not granting new grants. Has the payback arrangement made us re-eligible for state funding?
Yeah, so we have been open for and eligible for grant applications for the last 2 to 3 years now. So we're
completely good at this point.
Yes, yeah. So this deficit repayment is basically a... They're looking at it as like a separate contract now rather than...
Carol, last question.
I just also want to mention that I apologize to my peers and to the people who are going to come after this, but I was called away to something out of town that I have to leave early for. Your contracts, do they have an indirect cost recovery or an overhead allowable? And what do you use that for?
They do. We have put overhead into contracts, but we really try to limit that just because we want to get as much implementation on the ground as possible. But that is another option that we have. It makes the grant less competitive across the state. So.
Thanks.
Thank you, John. As all of you know, Dave and I are your reps to the Soil and Water, and we think John and his staff have done a great job over after the dust up. It's just turned in a really positive way. So thank you for that, John.
Well, thank you for all the support.
Okay. Highway Department. And Jeff is here. Let me tell you, and I gave you wrong information, the lovely blue sheet that I gave you, the OTR number, page number, is OTR numbers, not the beginning of the budget in the big book for whatever department we're talking about. So those refer to the OTR number, and if you flip the pages back, you will see the beginning. You will see the budget for whatever department it happens to be. So Jeff's OTR are on Chapter 4, 132 and 8. Go ahead.
Can you, the OTR number is the page number, is that what you were saying?
The OTR number is the Chapter 4, page 132, and they go from 132 to 138. Am I correct, Kevin?
That number in the column to the far left will take you to the OTR within the department or agency section.
Right.
It doesn't take you to the first page of the department or agency section.
It doesn't
OTR.
Take you to that.
Right to the OTR. Right to it.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Good to see everyone here tonight. I have a shameless plug. Mark's Pizza has gluten-free pizza.
All right.
I do have an in there if you're looking for a deal. looking at the 2017 highway budget presentation here. And let's get the keys right. This is the recommended budget. As you can see, we're up a little bit in both the expenditure and the revenue. The net local is shown there. The 125 is reflection of a OTR that we are attempting to apply to target. I'm talking about that a little more in the next couple of slides. That does show a pretty high, or should say a decrease in OTR from what we had last year. Getting into the major influences of our slides, major influence that I see coming out of Albany, and it's a good one, is that we've seen an increase to our New York State Consolidated Highway Improvement Program, most commonly referred to as CHIPS. Just want to take a moment to explain. There's a great advocacy effort done both at the County Highway Superintendents Association level, and we partner with the town statewide association level. There's a couple times a year that representatives visit Albany and talk to our local representatives and work through that process. In the time that I've been and doing this for a few years, I've never seen an increase to CHIPS this large. If you remember the last few years, we were able to secure an extreme winter recovery funding, and that generally ran for this county about half of the 460. They took that away and then gave us the 460. It's always good to see an increase, but it's not exactly a $460,000 increase. It's really about a $230,000 increase from what we've seen in the last couple of years. Nevertheless, it's in the right direction, and we always take it when we are given it. The CHIPS bags up there is really a advocacy tool that when we do go to Albany and we're visiting people, we supply everyone with CHIPS as we walk around the hallways. And on all the tables it says CHIPS. We have a sticker on there, you support CHIPS, have CHIPS. So it really comes in nice. I just want to make everyone aware that they're always glad to see us come, and they have something to eat. I'll bring some next time. Yeah. The next major influence, there's two on this page, and this is in regards to the OTR of the 125,000 target OTR. Really comes as a result of the mild winter that we saw last year. Contractually with the towns and snow and ice, the payment to the towns was substantially less than the previous year, and we're looking to capture a portion of that with the 125,000. Understanding that if we do go to a, you know, generally things are cyclic and we will see snow again, that can be reduced and put back in the other line where we pay it out to the towns for the contractual snow and ice service that they do. The plan is that it will go right to that line item for blacktop. I threw a couple pictures up there of paving operations. Another major influence that really started out last year, I discussed the increase of a FTE, and really with a lot of focus on the communication end of our department. I really wanted to say that it's become a really invaluable part and tool in the department. Those are the episodes, or I should say the volumes that we have six now that didn't start until March. Took a little bit of time to get off the ground, but we're seeing generally the articles contain general department announcements, project updates, employee birthdays, and in the end there's a crossword puzzle and it's all highway related stuff. So it is pretty difficult. I hope we do circulate a few of those around. I think some get up to this area for you to see. If you haven't had a chance to get these, and certainly let me know, I'd like to share them. But it's been a really good positive influence in the department. Just wanted to share. Now comes the expensive stuff. Equipment replacement and acquisition. In the requested budget, we have a line item for equipment specifically at $196,000. That is an aggregate of the pieces that you see to give you some idea of what we'll be looking at. A broom tractor at $47,000. Just an aside, the broom tractor that we're presently using is really, really we can only drive and forward. The reverse hasn't been working quite some time. So it kind of tells you the age of that tractor. The two chippers that we're requesting, one at $75,000 and one at $29,000, those are two units. We have two units now that were purchased sometime in the early 2000s. They've also really seen a lot of their useful life gone. And the plan with these two units, the reason for the larger unit and the smaller unit, the $75,000 unit is going to take a lot bigger limbs. It can, and the two units we have now are comparable to that unit. They will handle up to 12 to 14 inch logs of wood, whatever you can pick up, pretty much. And they need to be pulled around or towed with a considerably larger vehicle. We thought that we should also look at and consider a smaller chipper can be pulled with a lighter truck. It's a quicker response vehicle for tree, you know, cleaning up trees that were down. And that also comes with the ability right now our sign crew, their vehicles aren't large enough to pull the chippers we have now. And thus, when they're going around trimming trees, they trim them as long as they can get a truckload of brush and then have to find a place to dump it off. And then they go back to doing that work. And with the smaller chipper, they'll be able to chip it, and they'll be able to get a lot more work done, a lot less travel time in between. So that's the other thought of getting the smaller size chipper. The felling, that's just a budget. I'm not sure if that's going to be the actual type of loader or trailer that we buy. We have one of these. This is an additional one. The one that we have now is used every day, and it's on very high demand. It's a very useful trailer, moving, you know, basically small pieces of equipment, skid steers, our small excavator, things like that. Culvert pipe, it moves on this, you know, very well. The days of throwing a culvert pipe up on top of a dump truck are kind of gone by now, so we need to be able to travel them safely, and that's what this trailer would do. The next item I'd like to discuss in our requested budget is the vehicle replacement line item for $228,000. If you add the two together, it's our standard line item for equipment. It's $440,000, I think, $196,000 and $228,000. And so we're kind of splitting it up this year. This is a replacement for four extended cab four-wheel drive trucks with a snow plow. It's similar to the one you're looking at there, only it has a plow on it. The trucks now are priced at $57,000 per unit. That'll add up to $228,000. These are the idea that the program where that we are able to purchase and replace vehicles on a very, very routine, relatively a couple of years. This is actually a three-year replacement. The anticipated revenue that we're going to see with these vehicles is also in the budget, so it would actually balance against that $228,000. The revenue for these vehicles is anticipated about $28,000 per unit. Times four is about $112,000. And then basically the units from the previous slide, we think we'll get about $8,000 apiece, which gives the total revenue for this whole package up to $136,500. When you take the usage of these vehicles, the ability to roll them over at a very low cost, they're under warranty the whole time. The only thing we're doing to these is basically is under warranty. We're basically only doing oil changes. We're able to recoup some of that cost. We did an exercise, and I had it on a information last year as a major influence, where we were down to under 50 cents a mile. It's like 36 cents a mile, 42 cents a mile that we're paying for these vehicles, which is a very economical use. And when you put the whole idea and the plan together, it does roll around and make a lot of sense. Kind of getting into discussion of projects and blacktop and quality. Slide is showing overall pavement quality. This is, if you look at the chart, our third year in the overall condition index, starting in 2014 to 2016. We really saw an increase with the bond funding in 2014, which started shooting it up, and we're still continuing. Glad to see There's an increase from 2015 to 2016. So you kind of describe what you're looking at. You're looking at it's an overall, every piece of all of our roads, we rate them twice a year based on their drainage, their pavement quality, cracking, potholes, drainage, like I already said, things like that. We score them. That is added and put into a software program where it gives us what our overall condition index is, and that's what you're looking at. The previous years, the most of the graph is occupied with a different program that we used to use, and that was in the PQI, and it's also on the 100 scale, so you're looking as close to as apples to apples. It's good to see it's on an increase. I think last year I talked about this a little longer, and just to try and reflect on that, I feel like that was really the low time and the downslide had a lot to do with the price of fuel and different other economical difficult times that we were enduring. It's good to see that we're on the rebound, and I think that as long as we can keep doing what we're doing, I think we'll continue that direction. We're looking at the road construction map of what we have planned for the 2017 season, and as I always want to stress that these are roads that we hope to do and plan on doing, but there are always changes, and sometimes over the winter other roads will see more deterioration on a larger scale, and we do need to mix them up a little bit, but generally this is our plan right now for next year. Kind of taking them around. If you use the Cayuga Lake as the 12 o'clock, I'll go around clockwise. I'll kind of name them off so you hear them. We're looking at Conlin Road. We're looking at Champlin Road. And we're also going to complete a little piece of Groton Road. We're calling it the Groton Spur down to the new bridge. The other piece of the road was completed this year, and we weren't able to complete the whole thing. West Dryden Road is on here again. It was on there last year. This is an example where things always don't work out the best way. We were planning on doing them this year. I know most of you are aware of the possibility and possible likelihood of a gas line being installed. We are basically holding off as long as we can. We did look at the road and the condition of the road. We were able to put some thin, what we call T&L layers on some of the worst sections, and we did do the other piece of the road the previous year. I don't like to wait too long for utilities because that can run into problems and your road ends up being in really worse condition than if you just did the work to start with, but we are looking at when that is going to happen and adjusting our schedule accordingly. To continue around, we have Flatiron Road. We have South Danby Road. We were able to do quite a bit of work there this year, but we weren't able to do much paving. We did do some real, like I said earlier, some T&L work down on the southern end, hit some really, really poor areas of pavement. Next year, with the work that we got done this year, we should be able to move in there and actually do some blacktop overlay. We have Bostwick Road. It's new this year. Sheffield Road. Applegate. And Du Bois Road. next slide is showing our capital project plan. These are basically all the projects that we expect that will be in and around our F&I committee for approvals and things going on, possibly in construction, possibly in design. But these are the projects that we will be handling that are active in the year 2017. I noted on here also that, and I'm sure most of you are aware, but the Highway Department produces a quarterly status report. And in that quarterly status report, we focus on what our capital program is going on there. It gives quarterly updates and things like that. And I think all of you get a copy of that. If you ever have a chance and you have a question on a capital project, if it's not in there, please give me a call, and I'd be happy to answer whatever questions or try to find an answer. Same thing. We'll go around. We'll start with the Cayuga Lake at noon. And we'll do the clockwise. We have Salmon Creek Road Bridge, which is under construction. We are actually doing that in-house. That is a truss bridge. We have the Bailey Bridge, the temporary bridge alongside next to it, maintaining traffic. This was the bridge that was initially installed up at the Groton City site. It's giving us time for our own crew when there's time to work on the bridge, step through it. We've completed a lot of things. A lot of both abutments are being replaced. The anticipated completion date will be next year, and that'll finish with a painting of the bridge is what we're looking at doing. And that'll be done by a contractor. Some of the parts of this bridge have been done by a contractor, but we've done with our bridge crew most of the work. We also coming up Ludlow Road Bridge. That's not far. It's right in the Ludlowville area. It's a steel deck bridge that is on the tip, and we will be looking to produce an RFP this fall and hire a consultant engineer and start design next year. Mowryville Road and Red Mill Road bridges are very far along. We're looking to go to bid. Looking to at the next F&I committee to get permission to go to bid. We have acquired all the DEC permits. We are looking to have some final work done on the Memorandum of Understanding with the Historical Preservation Organization, SHPO, and we're also working with Corps of Engineers, but those are very close. The idea there is to let it to bid this fall. Hopefully the project and the weather cooperates and they're able to get some work done. We have George Road Bridge. We have Game Farm Road Bridge. Both of George Road is going to design next year. Game Farm Road Bridge, we're trying to work through final design now and go to construction next year. Dodge Road Bridge would be going to design. Ellis Hollow Road Phase 3 should be going to construction next year as we work through. That's a federal aid pass-through project, so there's a lot of state oversight. So it's taking some time. Coddington Road intersection safety, it should say Coddington and Burns Road intersection safety project. That project is underway. We're progressing. It's also a federal aid project. We're looking, our deadline is to have a property acquired by the end of January of next year. It looks like things are falling into place on that. The state is acquiring the property there. All that property is very thin pieces. We've had public meetings and everything is very positive. And then the last one is East Hill Pedestrian Crosswalk Safety Improvement Project. And that as well, we're trying to do that one before the Ellis Hollow Road Phase 3. That's a small project relatively. It really was only having to do with improvement safety of two crosswalks in that area. The next slide is our FTEs. This is, as you can see, remained unchanged for a few years now. I think it's a great number. I don't see that needing to increase unless something were to drastically change. And the 0.94 is our, and it's more than that. It's the fractional number. It has to do with your seasonals. Martha asked the question earlier about the seasonals. This number is a aggregate, and it includes seasonal workers in the summertime. next slide brings us to our over target requests. The first one, OTR number 30, is something I've already discussed, the $125,000, looking to go to our target, add it to our blacktop, and it's result of our town snow and ice savings. The next one is, this is the first time you're hearing of it, over target request 31. It's really looking to purchase equipment. It's a consists of a two loaders and an excavator. And the next slide is going to get deeper into the direction I'm going to explain this on. The Highway Division at this time is in an effort to keep up with the division's long-range equipment replacement plan. That's the reason we're requesting the two front-end loaders and an excavator in 2017. The $408,790 request is less the estimated trade value for these three units. Now, the three units, these are estimated values. We've been working with a couple vendors. The 2008 621 loader and the 2012 621 loader are both estimated trade value at $48,000. And then the 2002 John Deere 160 excavator is estimated at about $29,000. So the purchase price would be that $125,000 added to the $408,790 over target request. Not showing it as a revenue anywhere because it's a trade value. And it's in this form of an OTR. This is a one-time OTR, and we are looking to, I believe, pay this out of the equipment reserve is what we're planning on doing if it's approved. To talk about the units themselves, the 2002 John Deere, that kind of speaks for itself. It is getting to be an older piece of equipment. The newer years appearance of the two loaders. Is a little bit not accurate. These two loaders are yard loaders. They experience a lot of premature wear and tear. They're in the salt. They're in that sort of thing. I feel like we're trying to capture, the idea is to capture them right now when they're at a higher value for a trade and basically reduce the replacement value of these units.
Questions. I have Peter and Anna. Peter, go ahead. Please use your microphone.
I have one, maybe two, very general questions. I mean, it's a little hard to follow these numbers one way and the other, but when I used to be on Public Safety Committee, I was always depressed because it seemed to me that our road worse, and we didn't seem to have money to fix it. That was my general impression. And I'm wondering, I mean, the CHIPS has gone up, and the Federal Highway Bill passed, which was remarkable. And is it fair to say that we've reached sustainability, that maybe not that we can make our roads better, but that given the kind of funding that we've been used to, and assuming that the federal and the state money, you know, doesn't get worse, are we at the point where we can keep our roads without getting any worse over a long period of time?
I think that watching indicators, watching the pavement quality index, the overall condition index, and things like that really helps us to gauge that. I think if we are increasing funding, if the cost, what happened before with when the diesel prices were going on and the high price of diesel and the high price of asphalt, and then the funding, the economic times were kind of in trouble, generally speaking, that was when highways were really suffering. And without continually increasing, everything is getting more expensive, without continually adding some money there, you're really staying a status quo. And if you could pave a mile this year and the price goes up, you're not paving a mile next year with the same funding. So I really think we're on the right track. To say that we're at sustainability, I think there's too many unknowns to really say for sure, but I'm watching that index and watching it continually rise, and I really think we are improving things. I think the road, our road system generally is better. We have better miles of road at a higher quality than we did 3 years ago. We want to make sure that we keep on that track.
That's very comforting. You know, after your suggestion that it just popped into my head, when those chippers, I think you ought to buy the bigger chipper because then we get more chips.
Right. Yeah. Bag it.
Oh, that's one thing I forgot to say. Please clear your jokes with me before you do them. No. Nice job, Peter. Go ahead, Anna, and then I have Mike and Martha.
I think I just have a really quick question, just because I'm new, and you probably covered this for everybody last year. Just a little bit more about the overall pavement quality and why it dipped so intensely. And you're mentioning gas prices, meaning that you, because of the gas prices, you couldn't cover as much ground, and therefore there was a reduction in quality during that time. Is that what that means? Is that what you were referring to?
If you look at the 2008 and on, you know, there's a kind of a deflection, and it continually drops. Again, this is my theory that was when, I know statewide, I wasn't here, but I was in the same kind of work, and I understood that when I say gas prices or the cost of a barrel of oil was increasing, which our diesel prices to run our trucks was higher, a vendor that would supply or truck the material was higher, the price per ton of asphalt was shooting through the roof. And at that time, our funding was kind of staying level, and I don't, like, say chips, for example, we weren't necessarily losing chips funding, but it was no way staying with the price of doing business and, you know, not being able to get any further down the road than we did the previous year. And, you know, we went from paving a mile of road with $100,000 to going to paving half a mile of road with $100,000 back several years ago.
Okay.
That was a really big impact.
And what about this massive dip from 2013 to 2014? What was that about in such a short period of time?
Yeah, it's, and Peter will talk about that too. The graph shows a massive dip. If you look at over on the left-hand side, you know, you're like 64 to 70.
72.
Yeah, in that range. If I could show this graph in a lot of different ways, and it does appear to be I don't think it's anything to be really alarmed about. And you have to keep in mind that this is all, every mile of our road, every piece of our road, and it's a general average. So if it's like 50% even, it's still a pretty decent travelable highway.
Uh-huh.
So we're really up in a good, you know, 75% range. We want to keep that up there and keep rising.
Cool.
Thanks. Yeah.
Michael.
Jeff, how many miles of highway do we have?
305.
And that 125,000 that we're going to move, hopefully, from the snow plowing contracts over to your highway materials, what part of a mile will $125,000 pave?
Well-worded question. It would depend on where exactly that did and what process we chose to use that with. If we went right with a 1.5-inch overlay, it would be like you said, we might be able to get, and it depends on the width of the road and how thick the blacktop is and a lot of things, but you might be able to get a 0.5-mile of road. If it's a, say, a 2 10-foot lanes and a 1-foot shoulder, so you're talking a 22-foot road. A lot of our county roads are 22-foot roads. We're working on Peruville Road right now, and that's a 32-foot road. So if you're doing, if you apply that same math to that road, you're only going to get a 1/4 mile. What I talk about with other ways of fixing things, like this year we were able to do chip seal, which is a preservation measure, and we, for about just under about $350,000 we used, and we were able to put a surface treatment, which is a tar and stone overlay, which seals the road, and you're buying time. It's preserving, and you want to do that to your better condition roads, and you'll in the wear curve, or the curve of every road has a curve, and it has this curve, and at the end it drops, And if you can keep extending that from dropping down and getting where you have to do a full reconstruction, you're bettering your OCI and you're extending your average really well. We did, for 350, we did about 37 miles of surface treatment this year. And we're going after the roads that we've done in the last 10 years that are showing a little bit of wear, but didn't necessarily need that overlay, that expensive overlay, or the FDR, full-depth reclamation treatment that it would take. So the 125 helps, and it can help in a lot of different ways.
Thank you. Oh, and by the way, we got the most glowing letter from a property owner on the Prouville-McLean Road about the great job your crews did with the stormwater runoff ditching over there.
Good. Thank you.
Martha.
I have a compliment, too, that the work that's been done in my district, which has been a lot, people have been really in places where I expected a lot of complaints. There's just been praise for how you've communicated and your staff have been, accommodating and communicative. So that, I really appreciate that. That makes a lot of difference. I'm looking at the sort of the main budget, the first budget page. So it's page 125 of section 4. And looking down under revenues, so there's federal aid. 2014, it was 53,000. 2015, it was 162,000. 2016 and 2017, it's zero for federal aid. So is that kind of depending on the project that, you know, what projects are in the cycle? Is that...
Those two lines in the 14 and 15, when we did the Newfield Covered Bridge project, we self-funded that one rather than have it on the capital plan, like most of our capital projects. And that's why we see some federal revenue coming into these lines. And that's why you're seeing zero.
So the federal projects tend to be the ones in the capital program,
right,
so that they don't show up in the operating budget.
This was a smaller, relatively smaller dollar value project, and so the decision was made when it was brought in to fund it through our own highway budget, and that's what those are.
Okay, so that doesn't indicate some drop off in federal funding. It's just
not
that it's somewhere else. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Julie.
I wondered if you could remind me what the change was when we went from one pavement quality index method to the present one.
The PQI, pavement quality index, is from a program called RSMS, and it did a small portion of what the program that we have now called Cartograph does. And Cartograph, although it's really the same idea, although it's a lot more intensive and it's a conglomeration of a lot more values when we're rating the road than the RSMS, but the OCI is from the Cartograph. It's just the terminology that the two different programs use. So we're in 2014, and the difference in 2013 to 2014, the 2013 last PQI we had was from the RSMS program, and that's when we began working with the Cartograph program and instituting those changes into the OCI.
I thought maybe that would help Anna understand that we had switched
right
method.
Right, yeah.
I'm seeing that. So the dip may be because of a change in technology as well.
I don't know.
Excuse me?
A little bit. So I had another question. A while ago, we passed a road protection law when we anticipated possibly heavy loads that would hurt the roads we were responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Has that ever been invoked or used by you?
It has. We have been to a meeting at a couple different projects that have gone on. The most recent being up off of 96 in the town of Ithaca. The meeting was at the town of Ithaca, and it really involved the town, and they have a road preservation law as well. Theirs is a little different than ours. The construction project was on their town road, and a little piece of it, so they were involved in it. At that time of the meeting, we discussed what our road preservation law was and what the requirements would be, and I really appreciated the fact that we were sitting at the table before it started. Their plan and their dump site was going to travel across a couple county roads, and when they heard about the process, and we were able to actually help them find another dump site that only utilizes the state road and went right up 96 right towards Ulysses, and it was right off of the side of the road. It really worked to everyone's advantage, and we were able to, one, be aware, and then in this case, it wasn't a necessary thing that they needed to involve. They were going to be over the limit, and we would have had to do a road user agreement, but in this case, they were able to do something else. So it kind of, I think it worked well, and the fact that we came to the table really early, it was a really, it was a good to use the process and become aware of it, kind of dust off some of the information and the program and the applications that we had. But it, that's the only time, that's the closest time we came to using it.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you, Jeff. Good job. Office for the Aging is next. Lisa's here. And come on up. Office of the Aging budget is in Chapter 4, OTR 19, on page 37.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you all on opening night. let's see. So I'm just going to start off here with the our recommended budget includes about a 1.2% increase in net local. See, our revenues have increased. That's largely due to state funding as well as local. Just to start from square one with a mission of the Office for the Aging and New York Connects, and I'm going to get to that name a little bit later in the presentation. We're now known as New York Connects Tompkins County Office for the Aging. It's a statewide marketing thing. Our mission is to assist older adults age 50 or 60 and over to remain at home and independent with the quality of life and human dignity for as long as possible and appropriate. And we work to achieve this mission. I'll just go through an overview of our department. We have 15 staff members that consists of 8 full-time staff and 7 part-time, and you'll see that it amounts to about 12 FTEs. We administer approximately 28 programs, depending upon how you slice and dice them, some of which we offer directly through our office, but we also have 22 contracts across 14 different subcontractors. And we our funding comes to us in about 19 separate funding streams from the federal and state sources, as well as the local match, and spans 4 different fiscal years. So we're a small department, but we have a pretty complex budget. The major influence, kind of the elephant in the room, is in the U.S. roughly 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 as of today, and as of every day, 10,000 more will cross that threshold until 2030. So so that's what we're all about. In terms of the local picture, this is what it looks like here in Tompkins County. With the population projections for people age 60 and over, The surge in the population, the baby boomers are still on the younger side overall and less in need of intensive long-term care services and supports. However, that demand is showing up in our office in other areas, you know, where people are becoming eligible for Medicare and are looking for health insurance counseling, the HEAP eligibility, things like that. And we're also our office is involved in a lot of counseling for caregivers. So a lot of baby boomers have older parents that they're concerned about. We're also involved in a lot of planning efforts for how we are going to meet these demands as the population becomes more frail and more in need of services. And just a word, the population statistics are used in part, you know, in the federally in looking at states for funding formulas for aging services, and the state looks at these population projections or population statistics. They look at counties in terms of funding for aging services, and Tompkins County has the third highest rate of growth for people age 60 and over across the state. Every county is growing. You know, these graphs look similar in different in all of the counties, but ours is the third highest rate of growth, though we don't have the highest number of older adults, but we're growing fast. Major influences on the budget. We have seen, and I reported about this last year, a significant infusion of New York State funding through what's called the Balancing Incentive Program, or BIP. And this funding is being used to expand and enhance the New York Connects program. And under that program, the purpose of that is to strengthen what's known as this no wrong door single entry point for long-term care services across New York State. They're looking at the offices for the aging across the state to be this no wrong door and to be the entry point for people of all ages who need long-term care services, so people who with disabilities, with long-term care needs. So the funding is significant. It's, you know, we went from about $44,000 a year to about $270,000 in 2016. That spanned over a state fiscal year because the funds were late in coming, but there are restrictions on the funds, and they can be spent on personnel costs to deliver information, assistance, and options counseling. They can't be spent on services, and the funds can be spent on technology and infrastructure. So we've used this funding, we've utilized it well in terms of our own infrastructure. Computer replacement, you know, office needs, and as well as, you know, needed changes in personnel. And this funding is slated to be ongoing and sustainable, though the state has not told us to what extent it's going to be sustainable, though they want us to invest the funding in personnel costs. So in the 2017 budget, I've budgeted fairly conservatively with this funding because I'm just not certain. I know it's going to be there, but I don't know to what extent. So we did spend a good portion of it in 2016 on the one-time technology and infrastructure expenses to give us a little wiggle room in 2017 if it's not all there for ongoing personnel. The other major influence is that we had, I would call, a very successful restructuring of our PERS program, Personal Emergency Response System, which we began with the subcontract in 2015. We're fully implementing with with Doyle Medical Monitoring in 2016. They are providing the technology and infrastructure for our medical alert machines now. The calls are routed through their call center in Rochester, and they do our client billing. This has greatly improved our the technology for the program. We've just done a satisfaction survey, and we were either 99 or 100% satisfaction with the way things are going. The rates are competitive, and we're still able to offer a sliding fee scale. And what we found very important is that our staff still is involved in performing the installations and doing all of the client interface with the service calls, which provides an entree into aging services for over 400 people in the community. And often this is the first service that they utilize and then feel very comfortable calling us back and utilizing more services. And we then are reimbursed by Doyle for the time spent on this. So since we've gone to Doyle, we've reversed the trend of where we were losing clients on this program. We are now regaining our client base. And within this budget, there is a reinstatement of a half-time outreach worker to meet the demands of this program that was on the books a couple of years ago and we're putting back on now. So again, the full-time equivalents for our office is 12.26 in 2017, a slight increase. That includes the half-time outreach staff. There was a slight decrease in another front office staff person. We had included one over-target request that was not in the recommended budget, and you'll see between this slide and the next a slight discrepancy. That over-target was originally, when I submitted the budget, for $22,543 to maintain a Food Net staff at the living wage. And this last slide here gives a little more explanation. And in the write-up about the OTR originally, what we stated was that the Food Net would require an overall increase of $22,543 to maintain their employees at a living wage. At that time, we were unsure of the ongoing support of the direct care funding from New York State Office for the Aging. We had heard that the program was not going to continue in 2017. I've since heard that it is going to continue, and I have it in writing, though, you know, the state budget hasn't passed for 2017, but it is a program that is planning on going forward in 2017. And I'd heard from my contact at the state that there's no reason to believe that the funding would be any less than it would have in the past year. So with that new information, I'm suggesting that we modify our over-target request and ask for $10,043 for that maintenance effort for the living wage. Rather than the 22, yes. And that's it for me.
Okay, yeah, questions? Mike first and then Julie. I just want to make one comment, Mike, that the chart that impressed me was the county population projection for age over 60 plus between the years 2010 and 2020, and that there's going to be no shortage of people to run for the county legislature. So, at any rate, Mike, you're first. Go ahead. And who else had their hand? Someone else?
I just wondered about Food Net.
Julie, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wondered about Food Net. How is the demand there? Is that going up at the same rate of more elderly people, or is it holding steady, or what's their utilization?
I would say, and Steve is here, you can speak, but I would say holding steady. I don't think that, again, the surge in the population is at the point yet where the demand is greatly increasing for meal service. But Steve, do you want to, if you have, he's nodding.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I think your point is well taken, because I think a lot more people in the baby boomer era are finding themselves having to work longer. Even if they've turned 65, they aren't ready to retire.
Yes.
Dooley.
Thank you. This question is more for Joe. With this change in the over-target request, would your reaction have been the same?
I think so, although this helps. And honestly, I've got kind of an A list of items that I couldn't fit in mine, but if there was a little more money, I probably would have included it. So this with the living wage element is a high priority. So this would help. Let me just expand on it a bit, just to make sure legislature understands the perspective that we took on a lot of these. We were limited by the 3% levy target. And also, when we had approached the legislature in April at retreat and talked about things that we felt were important to do in this budget, we had a very small list of things that we said we would do. And beyond that, I think that the sentiment was that we would need to defer to the legislature on things above the personnel action, the 125 for highway and the weights and measures item. And so that's exactly what we've done here.
Yes.
Martha.
I am curious about that. One of my questions was about that OTR. I'm also interested in lifelong. You've got a couple of contracts, and I see in Appendix B, it's page 3. So you've got a couple of contracts with lifelong. Is there any news there, or is there any, you know, they're not part of your ongoing budget except through these contracts? How are things going there?
I think things are fairly stable there, stabilized, and I know. And I hear anecdotally all the time good things. I know that they've been in the process of moving all of their staff and personnel out of the 121 East Court Street building, and everything is now consolidated into the brick building, 119 Court Street, and that. So they're readying that property for sale. I hear actually very good things about their lineup and course offerings and the flow of people coming through. So I think it's good.
All right, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Up next is Social Services. Patricia's here, and welcome, Patricia.
Glad to be here.
Our OTR is on Chapter 4, page 248, OTR number 74.
Hello.
Hello.
So here is a listing of our expenditures, revenues, and the net local cost. And we are anticipating a minus 0.72% change in the local net local cost. This is the first time in a very, very long time that we have asked for an increase in our staffing. We're looking at a caseworker, a casework assistant, and a housing specialist, and a nurse. what's driving that are our numbers in adult protective services are increasing. We're getting referrals from the Social Security Administration for us to be payee for people who are homeless, and that is something that has not happened before. So we're seeing caseloads are growing and the cases are more complicated. The other thing that's driving the staffing is we are seeing an increase in individuals, parents who have addictions, most especially in heroin, but it crosses all over the place, actually. We are filing about at least two petitions a week in family court, which is huge. Our family treatment court numbers are very high. I have right now we're working with 119 adults, and that the children are about 117. So those are parents with children, and some of the children are in foster care, some of the children are at home or with relatives. DSS always has uncertainty. That's sort of our middle name. We're monitoring the public assistance caseloads. They've been low, and we're not hearing from the state that there's an anticipation that they'll grow, but we always have to keep that in the back of our mind. There was a federal regulation coming down on daycare. It could be a significant cost to counties and the state, but the rollout has been parsed out so that in 2016 through 2017, we're probably not going to see any fiscal impact, but that it will come. And the Medicaid cap, we're told it's going to hold, but it could change late next year. I'm done.
Anna, Mike, Martha, go ahead.
Quick question about the numbers you gave. If you could just repeat those numbers for the adults really quickly, and then how they differ from the previous years so we can get a sense of the change over time.
Okay. So the numbers I listed were 119 adults and 117 children. In 2014, we were working with 63 adults and 56 children. In 2015, we had 95 adults and 95 children.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Mike?
We all had a scare at the end of the budget session in Albany about Medicaid. Mm-hmm. You alluded to that. Are you hearing anything more? Do you think the governor's going to push for that next year to take the cap off for us upstate?
If only I knew what Andy was thinking.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
but
I think they're primed for it. I was just on a conference call with commissioners from across the state, and they're pretty convinced that it's looming out there.
And what significant changes will the new federal regs make if they're implemented?
Oh, it's massive. They will require a certain amount of training for providers that has never been required before. They will require background checks, and that's going to cost a lot of money. You'll have to have staff going out and observing the daycare providers at least twice a year.
This would include like the folks who have like two children or
mm-hmm.
all of it.
Yep. It's not good. It's good. It's good stuff. It's just going to cost a lot of money.
Expensive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Martha.
Yeah, it's good stuff and not reimbursed.
at all. Okay. You had about the new positions you were asking. I tried to write down. You said housing specialist, a nurse, and what else were the other two?
A caseworker and a casework assistant.
Okay. Because looking at your FTE list, pages 241 and 242, there's a lot of adjustments back and forth,
right,
you know, from when you're at the center. One I just noticed, information aid, that was 2015, it was 6.29, the next year 2.29, 2017 back to 6.29. Was that a mistake?
What page is that?
Page 241, right about the middle of the page, information aid. You know, across that line, it's 2.0, then 4.7, then 6.29, then 2.29, then back to 6.29.
I'd have to look at that a little more, but if Tom's got...
Information aid is an entry-level position. So in some cases, persons hired into those... into that title are promoted into higher grade positions. Sometimes they come and go very briefly. So I would guess that, I can't tell you this for certain, but I would guess that in the years where you see those numbers going down, it's because we have moved people up in the organization.
Okay. So it's not that position got eliminated, but that person moved around. Okay.
And I'll say that personnel created that position maybe 5 or 6 years ago to be able to bring in entry-level people and get them into the system, and then the goal with promoting them into clerical positions.
Okay. And I just want to say I'm pleased that you've asked for more staff. You've been doing, handling increasing low caseloads. I mean, I know you've got some of the top line numbers are lower than they've been, but you've been increasing the number of caseloads for years and holding steady on your staff. And I think I'm ready to support this. Appreciate it.
Patricia, I have a comment and a question. Especially your major changes in staffing, the epidemic of opioid addiction. I had related to you in the park after the county picnic about a family that I know of who has suffered through this, and they were very, very complimentary about the work that the department did with them. And my question is, you know, what do you see in the future and how you're going to deal over the next year, couple of years with this in the department?
We're taking a look at the treatment process, and we're bringing in training from professionals, experts, to help inform our workers, people who we're contracting with, who are seeing kids and parents, so that it's not just waiting until the hotline call comes in, but really looking at preventative measures that would educate the community about what to look for and how to engage in a positive as opposed to punitive.
Thank you. Martha?
One other thing on the Adult Protective Services. I think I missed something you said. You said you're getting calls for to be the payer for, like, homeless people who...
Right. So someone is getting SSI because they're disabled. They get the check, and they manage their own money. We are seeing more and more of those individuals ending up homeless, and the Social Security Administration calls us and says, you need to manage their money because they're sleeping in the street or they're at the shelter. And so we take on that responsibility so we can make sure their rent's being paid and that they have food on the table.
So is their check supposed to cover the rent? And you're saying it gets mismanaged and they end up being evicted?
Yes. Or they are, you know, cashing the check and people target them to, you know, wait until the check comes and then they show up at the door, and they're very, very vulnerable people. Thank you.
Joe.
Yeah, just a couple of things. First of all, when Patricia talked about the positions that are being created, I think everybody knows that was within her target. So when I spoke the other night about aligning resources with priorities, that's what DSS has done. And so, again, those four positions are four new positions, but they've been able to do all of that within their target, which is important. Now, outside of target, there was one OTR that wasn't in the slideshow that DSS has asked for. And I think we may have slipped on, I don't know what happened there, but there is one OTR that was requested but not recommended. And again, in terms of my A list of things, what they asked for was the difference in cost between conventional vehicles and electric vehicles in their purchase. And since they get so much reimbursement back and from state and federal aid when they do those kinds of things, it's a relatively small item. It nets out at $8,375 of target funding to be able to do that. So when you look at the long list of OTRs that are in front of you, that will be among them. It just wasn't.
Sorry.
Yep.
But you didn't recommend it.
Didn't recommend it. Again, I've tried to defer a lot of these that were outside what I said we would do to the ledge. But if you ask me how this fits in my priority scale, I think it's way up there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Does that OTR have a number?
It's number 74.
It's on page 248.
Yeah, it's in the book, isn't it? Something for the legislature to do. County clerk. And we're back on schedule, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Hurry up.
Number 74.
Oh, I did. I'm sorry.
I don't know, right here. Number 74.
Hey, Joe. The OTR full list goes from number 65 and then jumps to 78.
Did you do that for everybody else? Am I missing pages?
Kevin?
I would have to double check, but I believe that's because we've listed them alphabetically by department. So the in the summary, so that the numbering isn't.
Got it. Thank you.
Go ahead. Welcome.
Good evening. Let's see. For our recommended budget, it looks like we have a large percentage of change at 11.09%, but it's just for the one OTR that I'm asking for and one-time funding. The numbers you see are for all of our departments, county clerk, DMV, records management, and central services. Our employees' amount has not changed. We've asked for one over-target request, which is to continue scanning county records using Challenge Industries as our, or Challenge Imaging now, as our vendor. So I like to tell all the good news. There's a possibility of the DMV revenue retention that we get to keep. It's currently 12.7% of everything that comes over our counter. We are trying to get that raised. We tried last year, it didn't go. We're going to try earlier this year in the fall to meet the legislative sessions and to approach the governor earlier in the budget process about it. Last year, I think they were asking for 25%. We may have to lower that a little bit, but that would be a nice increase for our revenues. We also did a lot of customer service training this last year. We did customer service de-escalation training because my goal in life is to make sure that my employees get home every night safely. So we spent time with that and teamwork training. which was really good for the employees to do. I did that for the county clerk and DMV. TC3Biz did that for us. We won top digital county again for the third year in a row. Lauren went down and got the award for us this year. We're doing a lot of community outreach. At Cornell, we did some veterans fair. We do a lot of user groups for our shared services groups. We do training for them. And the last one we had, we actually had two people from the software company fly out from California. They offered to come out, and they wanted to meet our group because it was such a good, enthusiastic group. We're continuing with our naturalization ceremonies. We do those three times a year. I can actually say three times a year I come to work, and I'm really happy. Mm-hmm. I just can't take the smile off my face. We do two in the courthouse and usually one at a school, and they've been very well attended. And at DMV in April, it was the organ donation month. We signed up 272 organ donors just in the month of April. And you figure we kind of had a competition with the other counties to see who could get it. I said, but we have a little bit more problem. We have the highest rate of organ donation already, so it's not like we can, you know, sign up everybody. So we were pretty bragging about that, and a lot of trash talking went on with the county clerks, but we really did. We did good. And that's basically it.
Questions for Maureen?
Sure.
Mike, Anna, Martha.
The digitization.
Yeah.
Where are we on the road there?
Well, you know, I'm just tired of it, so I would like
well,
to
you've
be
been doing it for a lot of years.
I know.
Brought in a lot of money.
And I really want to get done with it. Some departments are still creating the paper, and so we have to work with those departments, usually with ITS on some software change. So, like, the DA's office is a big generator of paper, but they're working on something. So as they work on it, we'll come down. So this over-target would be to catch up their back stuff. The health department has some long-term retention records we'd like to do up, and finance, and so we're working on it. But we are definitely getting near the end.
So most of the backlog has been caught up. It's just trying to keep up with the current stuff.
Yeah, and they always surprise me. I think I'm done until someone shows me some, you know, basement filled with records somewhere. So,
come to my building.
Anna.
This, again, for me, given that it's my first budget season, it's more of a catch-up. I'm sure this is something that everybody else knows. The highlight slide, the DMV revenue increase, so just so I understand, the money that comes in through the DMV, most of it goes to the state. We're like a pass-through. We keep 12%.
Yeah, so we have kind of a hostile relationship with New York
State. I was going to say that sounds pretty hostile.
So they try to, when they send out the renewals, they send it so that you send it back to Utica, which would bypass us, cuts us out of the loop. They try to text you and get you onto my DMV. You send it. And it does make your life easier if you just do it. But we don't get any money. So it's the customers that come in the office that we get 12.7% of. And we've done a big push on a keep it local kind of campaign on educating the public. And we try to keep, you know, that going.
Is there any possibility of doing a similar app or online service that we could then keep the revenue local?
I don't know, because New York State DMV probably wouldn't let us do that. But what we do is we fight and we provide a lot better customer service than what they get out of the, you know, New York State DMV no longer has a toll-free number for people to call and ask questions. A lot of our neighboring counties don't pick up the phone at the DMVs. We get calls from all over New York State at our local DMV. You know, and things just aren't fair. So we want to fight for our fair share of revenue. And so we're hoping to get that retention rate, you know, increased
to 25, yeah. But maybe like 20. Just last quick question. Has it been raised recently? I mean, or is this 12% is what it's been
as long as I can remember. So back into like maybe 90, 80s.
So they've never granted an increase?
No.
Mike. No, what, I'm sorry. Martha. Then Glenn, then Will.
Just curious, about how many people a year do you naturalize?
Usually between 35 and 45 at each ceremony.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Yeah, you should really attend. Mike came to our last one. I had him do a welcome to the new citizens, and it's always a great day.
Yeah, and I always, like, see it that day. If you could let us know ahead of time, that would be great. Okay, thanks.
Can I make one observation? When I went there, many people are saying, well, folks will be moving to Canada, and depending on the outcome of the election.
No.
There were like six or eight in this group of Canadians becoming Americans.
Oh, nice.
Glenn.
Going back to the topic of license plates, specialty license plates, do you get credit for that?
No, because you do them online with them.
But when I did it the last time, I got a letter from you congratulating me.
You know what's really funny is my relatives called me. They're like, I went online and you thanked me with your picture. I'm like, well, we didn't get any money, so the state took the picture off my website.
Donate to Life license plates. You don't get a credit.
I know, but it's a hostile relationship.
Wow, that's interesting.
Will.
Can you say a little more about the de-escalation exercise that you do?
Well, it was Joe had worked on that and had said it was a priority. Now, at my office, I was as concerned because at the courthouse we have security, and you know, but at DMV they're in front of those plate glass windows, and they're not, you know, they are the best DMV in New York State, if not the country. But we still get people that can get angry, and so it was more to take the anger out of the moment, you know, to bring that level down, because maybe I got cut off in Wegmans and then someone was rude to me, and then I couldn't find a parking spot and I dropped my coin, and, you know, so they just have to realize that it's not, maybe not them, it's the whole thing of that day. And so it's been working very well, and I can see the staff using it. So
can I just wedge in there,
please?
Just like this year, we've really focused on the active shooter drills and work. We've watched very closely the clerk's exercise in de-escalation. DSS uses another trainer, also does de-escalation, to be a pilot to figure out how we should do this on a countywide basis next year. Next year, that will be our priority in terms of wholesale training of the workforce.
Yeah, our training was more for the front-end face-to-face staff, and we actually brought in some departments downtown, a few of their face-to-face, to see how they liked it, too. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dooley, do you have your hand up?
I did. It's a peculiar little question, Maureen. I'm back looking at the list of fees, because I know your department has lots of fees.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one on Appendix A, page 4, that says, file and record ? In addition to index number. And in 2016, it's zero, and in 2017, it's $35. What is that, something new?
I'm not sure.
File and record ? In addition
I
to
didn't print off those pages, so let me take a look here.
Dooley, can you tell us which page that is?
Appendix A, page 4.
Thank you.
Appendix A.
Mostly you've kept everything flat, which is very good.
Nothing has changed, so maybe it's something that, it's nothing I remember even charging for ever, so.
Kevin.
This could be another one of those housekeeping issues as we move from the old system, the old budgeting system, to the new one. One of the challenges is tying together the records that were kept in the old system for things like fees and contracts with the records that department heads like Maureen updated in the new system, and making sure that the 2017 entry in the new system tied back to the appropriate one in the old one. It's possible that that's therefore kind of an orphan, where it didn't connect back to the proper 2016 fee.
Yeah, so it's not a new one. Ours was set by statute. No, nothing new has changed recently, which is amazing. But
anything else from Maureen? Thank you very much, Maureen.
All right, thank you.
That concludes our – we have no one else. The DA will be coming Monday. Joe wanted to make a comment about a couple of pages of the budget.
Yeah, just one. After I raved about this new software system and told you it was nearly perfect, the very first damn question of the whole process came from Martha about soil and water. And it looks like on the consolidated budget pages, not the individual budget pages, consolidated budget pages, front page, the machine is adding the numbers for the amount requested as opposed to recommended. So if you go to the individual pages, you'll find the recommended amounts, but that cover sheet on top of every department is adding the wrong columns. So we'll be fixing all that and getting you the corrected pages before you meet again.
But on the cover sheet, where, like I just flipped to highway, you recommended, they only have the one OTR and you recommended it, so that number is the same.
That's right. So if I recommended what they asked for, it looks the same, but in fact the machine is looking at the request level as opposed to the recommended level.
Thank you, Eagle Eye, for picking that up. Mike.
I came in a little bit late. Did the fact that we may need a special meeting of the legislature come up?
No, but I was going to say that right now.
Thank
but
you.
You're the chair. Go ahead.
No, we'll let Joe tell the reason, or Dave, or whoever's got
that. There is a special meeting scheduled for Monday at 5. One item on the agenda. We will be on target at 5:30, hopefully.
Yeah, it should zoom right through. It was an item that was actually, I think it was approved by the F&I committee, an acceptance of federal aid for snowplow equipment at the airport. I think it made it through F&I with a contingency attached. It was pulled during the session. We now know that the award has been made to the airport, but our ability to execute on that award depends on proof that the governing body has authorized the acceptance of this money by the 14th.
Yeah, I'm looking at the right up to the agenda, and it's a 90% FAA share of the projected cost of the equipment, $797,000.
So that's just the half hour before the next budget meeting.
As long as there's not 25 people talking about whatever. Mike?
So that is an advertised meeting of the full legislature.
Absolutely.
We need the quorum plus.
Right.
So please come a half hour early.
Okay.
5 o'clock?
5 o'clock.
Mike, I will.
You'll notice on the back table there's still some tomatoes left. We are going, our garden is
and,
going
and
crazy
they
with
came
tomatoes.
Out of Will's garden, and they're great.
There's some baggies there. Help yourself and get them out of there.
They're delicious.
Are they organic?
Absolutely, Dooley.
Thank you all, and we'll be back at it again on Monday. Look forward to it.
My brain has no